So just to finish up with the basics, a really good goal or goals would be specific, doable, acceptable to all parties involved, and stated in the positive. Now, be sure to take cultural factors into account. And don't assume that just because you share, and Jim will go, and he may have already, he'll go off on this one, which is a good, very good point. Just because you think you share a culture doesn't mean you know where that individual's culture is. So I had a colleague who happens to be Jewish, but he's very relaxed about his Judaism, okay? He's culturally Jewish, but not religiously Jewish. He was seeing the husband of a patient of mine, and he just kind of assumed, he felt like this guy was the same social class, he seemed similar. So he made some snide remarks about religious Jews. I only found out because the wife mentioned to me, and I said, I know your husband was seeing so-and-so, how'd that work out? And she said, he never went back. And the patient never told the therapist, the patient just never came back. So it's easy to assume, but when it comes to goals, for example, and you don't have to, we do not, there's no way we can know every single culture. So ask. So Jim saw a patient who was Seventh-day Adventist. And to him, he was working with a family setting and a kid. And there were the culture was get those kids to behave, spare the rod, spoil the child. And so they had gotten into this vicious pattern of anger and whatever. But without understanding that the parents really, this was an important part of their culture, you couldn't even begin to negotiate about it. So when you're talking about goals, ask them, how does this fit? There are some things where I might say, go out and party. And it's like, whoa, no, in my religion you don't, and it's like, I stand corrected, just like I might pronounce the name wrong or whatever. It's like, these things can be really important. So ask and take those into account. You also do need to take into account time frame. So back when I was in grad school, there was no, I don't know why, but no, money was not a consideration. You saw a patient, you'd have their goal list, you'd achieve, and I love doing this. You'd accomplish every one of their goals, and then you'd say, okay, we've accomplished all these goals. What else would you like? Oh, okay, here's another goal list. We keep working on it. Well, I love that. You'd work on whatever the patient needs until they've accomplished everything they want. But if they're on an EAP and they have 6 visits, then don't agree to 37 goals. Talk about, okay, what's the most important? What can we, get started on and that you can work on your own? If they say, hey, I'm here for the long haul, that's fine. Then we can broaden if they have one. And by the way, when you're successful, goals broaden. So like the woman who just wanted to fly more comfortably to Hawaii, once she realized how effective it was, well, there's also my marriage, and there's also this, and there's also fun. But don't be unrealistic about your time frame. Don't get the person excited about 37 goals when it's like, okay, maybe we can help you cope better with your anxiety so that you can start a process and continue to work on it on your own. A model I love is the family practice model of therapy, where if a person doesn't have unlimited resources or if that doesn't work with your setting, what about, you go to your family doc. You don't go to your family doc every week for all year. You have a problem, you come in, you do a piece of work, but you know they're there. And then, So if we don't have time or we can't work on everything, we get a process started. And when your insurance kicks back in next year, I'm here. Or another issue comes up, I have people coming back because I am so old. I have people who come back after, I think my record is 20 some odd years. After not seeing me at all for 20 some odd years, something else comes. When you get that phone call, when especially if it happens to be a person that you've used as a case example in teaching, right? And it was wonderfully successful. And then the phone call is like, uh-oh, did they crash and burn? And almost always, it's just a completely new issue. You know, my mother just passed away and I'm really having trouble dealing with the grief. And that's totally different than the panic they came in with 20 years ago. But, you know, that if you're available, if you can do that so that you can do a piece of work, and then when they have more resources, they could come back and do another piece of work. But bottom line, just don't agree to something you can't, that there's no chance you can deliver on. So I think we, So if we look at Kathy's goals, Kathy was on the, I'm going to ask you guys, because in terms of the afternoon, because you know how hard it is to sit for the whole day, especially, by the way, I apologize, we usually try to have fairly crummy weather on course days, so you don't feel like anything. Not a blizzard. Not a monsoon, but just rare, dry, cold, or whatever. And it's actually pretty decent out, although it is clouding up, so maybe we're not missing that much. Anyway, sorry. That's one of those things that's kind of out of my control. But we have a choice. We could break up and do role plays of goal setting now, or I could go ahead and talk about homework and feedback, and then do the role plays at 4 o'clock. So it works fine either way. It depends on how restless people are and how restless they are.
I'd rather do 4 o'clock.
You want to do role play?
I would rather, role play 4 o'clock.
Okay. Anybody feel really strongly to about not doing role play 4? Is that because you're leaving?
No.
I do get that. Okay. No. So any objections? Does that seem okay with people? He didn't express it. Okay, fine. All right. So just brief, if we look at Kathy's goals on page 17, okay, she was the one in the videos from this morning, and okay, she started with reduce depression, get more pleasure out of life, improve sleep and appetite, get to work more consistently, get off the meds with doctor's approval. Okay, so it's a start. Now, how could you improve on these? What would make them even better? Yes.
What is get more pleasure out of life? What does she want to accomplish?
Be there. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Can she define get more pleasure out of life?
And maybe what things? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. What else?
Well, improve sleep. She could do that by.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Like, maybe she's sleeping too much and needs to sleep less,
right.
Or maybe she's not getting sleeping through the night. And what's appetite? You know, is she? I mean, I think you don't say improve appetite if you want to lose weight. And she was in fact painfully thin because she was so depressed she wasn't eating. But you can get clearer on that. Yeah. Anything else?
I think you can get to work more consistently and on time. I think you can measure that.
Yeah, and actually, eventually getting off the medication, you know, a lot of these, and even getting more pleasure out of life, you know, you can have her rate pleasure on a daily, you know, so yeah, you can measure them, but, you know, they could certainly, and certainly sleep and appetite, way too general. But again, you don't have to have every single thing perfect before you get rolling, but you want to make sure you get that clear. Because, boy, if I'm talking about, you need to get to bed earlier, and what's your sleep hygiene? And it turns out that it's not about that, you know, she's sleeping all day and can't drag herself out of bed, and I'm doing the opposite. So, all right. Well, then, I'm going to So what would be, so if somebody comes in with the goal, I want to stop feeling like a loser. How might you improve on that? And what's wrong with, what's not so great about that goal?
Well, what's a loser?
Okay.
I want to reframe it to a more positive goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's just, and people, when they're depressed, they'll come in, I want to not, you know I want to not suck in 37 different ways. They'll tell you all the ways I want to stop being an idiot, and all you're doing is, the ugly phrase they're using is dragging them down more. So that getting it more positive. And how about, well, I found through, these are too easy because I found through them already. So, okay. So moving on. Step one. You did the evaluation, you feel comfortable working with the person. You set your agenda for the next session. You help them work on some goals. You want to, then you move towards another very important piece of the puzzle, is homework. And I'm going to tell you, it is amazing how you do not want to skip even a single session of homework. If at all possible. People get spoiled. It's kind of like, I know with my dogs, if I fed them once from the table, they would be begging forever. If you let them, you know, if you don't set a homework assignment, then the next time you say, well, let's talk about what you're going to do between sessions, it's like, why? Or they're already spoiled. So, even if, I'm going to go so far as to say, even if you don't have any brilliant ideas, come up with something. Seriously. Tanji?
Yes. When you talk about homework, that's a big issue for myself.
Mm-hmm.
When the homework is assigned, what I'm having a problem with is the next session come in, they don't have it. And I'll reassign it for the next session.
Okay. Now, so what you are discussing, what you're mentioning is, in fact, the meat of the therapist, of the therapy, because, let's face it, there is a self-help book about every problem known to man. If somebody, you look it up, New Harbinger, if you ever want a really good sort of, New Harbinger has a decent book on everything, okay? Most people actually know, to a large extent, what they need to do. It's getting them to do it. So, and we will spend the whole year talking about ways of helping and facilitating people actually following through on their homework. So if you could just say, okay, here's what you need to do, and people would go do it, we'd be out of jobs. Okay, so it's a great question. That's what we're going to be working, because do not expect that people will just go home and do their homework. And just giving it back to them isn't necessarily going to get any better result. So I'm going to talk about, one of the best ways to actually get people to follow through is in the way you, and what you pick for the homework. Probably the best, one of the most important factors is those goals. If those goals are important to the person, they are much more likely to follow through. And in fact, if you have a person who's really not following through, it's not a bad idea to ask them, first you want to make sure that that it was set up in a way to facilitate follow through, but you can also ask them, when you've had to do some, in the past, how have you gotten yourself to do something hard? What works with you? But we'll get to compliance in a minute. But that's like the whole year. Because if they can do it themselves, then why do they need you? So, but to start with, you want the homework to be collaborative. Don't just say, okay, you do this, because that gets everybody's control issues up. Now, also, though, in the very beginning, just like my guy with the what are your top six goals for treatment, if in session one he said, so what would be a good homework assignment? As a patient, I don't know. you know, so you have to model for a few sessions. But you want to talk about, okay, so given the goal, what you know, let's look at what might be useful to do in between sessions. And I warn people, by the way, I warn them when they're making that first appointment, if they don't know what cognitive therapy is, I'll explain to them. It's very practical. It's down to earth. We're looking at the thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that cause you problems and what you can do to change them. And it involves working in between sessions on a daily basis. They don't want that. Bye. You know, I warn them up front because that is what it takes. Okay? So, the homework, you want to work with them and spend enough time. So don't, as they're walking out the door, say, oh, by the way, do this. Save time. But, you know, and have some ideas in mind. And that's why I love the goal list as the first homework assignment. Another good early assignment before you really have gotten into anything would be if you have a very short something to read, or a podcast to listen, you know, if you have something brief that really is right up the alley of what they're working with, you might, you know, I don't do a lot of bibliotherapy because I figure if you need to know it, I'll tell you. You know, something, you know, you want a few things up your sleeve so you're never stuck without a homework assignment so they don't get spoiled. But you need to make sure, how does that sound to you? Can you see yourself doing that before you set the homework or as you're setting it? The homework needs to be related to the goals. They need to see why. So the same woman who came back after 5 years because she, you know, she left because she didn't want to stop drinking before she worked on anxiety, came back 5 years later, the same woman, when she was a teen, had gone to an inpatient unit. This was back in the day when they had lengthy stays. So she was in an inpatient unit for 18 months. Okay? And I asked her, you know, what they did and what, you know, and whatever. And so when I was explaining, when I was starting to look at her cognitions and I was starting to talk about thought sheets, she said, oh, I did that. And I'm like, oh. Really? Okay. She said, oh yeah, we did that, you know, we did thought sheets when I was inpatient. And I said, so, and how, you know, what did you do with the thought sheets? And she's like, what do you mean, what did we do with the thought? It turns out what happened is she was told to write stuff down. She wrote it down. No one ever asked about it or did anything with it. So, of course, she was not only was she not helped by the homework, but she already was biased against it. And same thing, you'll get, you know, there's some fabulous family docs who know about stuff and, you know, who'll say, you know, do relaxation or here's a tape or get a tape or whatever. The thing is, if you just tell somebody do relaxation and you don't follow up on it, you don't find out how, whether it helped, if it was good, and people aren't going to do it. So, it needs, and I asked her, I said, so why were you doing thought sheets? She had no idea. How was it connected to your progress? She didn't know. And this is what's very humbling, is imagine if your client, if you were doing an exit interview with your client, okay? What we want to happen is that if the, you know, a stranger, you know, or, you know, they've gotten permission and an interviewer was saying, when patient's leaving or the therapy's over and it was asked, so what were your goals for therapy? The client should know, okay? And if somebody asks, what was your homework? They should know. And if asked, why are you doing a thought sheet? They should have an idea of why that might be related to their goals. And if it's not related to their goals, then you need to wonder, why are you asking them to do this? It needs to make sense. Nobody, it's hard enough to get people to do things. And it's hard to make change. Be clear, and be clear with your patients. This is tough stuff. Change is hard. I'm here to help you. But it has to make sense. So you may need to take the time to explain it to them, okay, why it's a good idea. It needs to be specific enough so they know what they're doing. Rather than, you know, just, this week try to be more assertive. Unless you've really gotten assertiveness training, unless you've really talked about it, they may have no idea how to do that. I mean, they need to know how to do, and they need to have some sense that they can do it. I often think people don't come back if they feel like they flunked the homework. So I like to set the homework as a, not necessarily share that, I don't want to give them the idea that they might not do their homework, but, you know, basically homework, a good homework assignment is at no lose. Because if they did it, they move towards their goal. If they didn't do it, we can pinpoint what got in the way and look at those thoughts and feelings that interfered. And often, you can set up the homework that, and that's my favorite homework assignment, where it's like, okay, so let's look at what would help you, and so we're going to ask you to do X. But if you find, and I want, you know, you can understand why it would be useful for you to, so, you know, to do relaxation training daily, okay, or exercise, whatever it is. Now, if you know it makes sense to you how that's related to your goal, good. Now, if you find that it's, and I have to collaboratively pick a time. So if it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon or 8 in the evening and you haven't done relaxation or exercise or whatever, then just jot down your thoughts and jot down your excuses. Jot down your reasons. And how are you feeling? Now, I have to tell you, that really increases compliance with the homework because most people would rather do the damn thing than have to write about why they didn't do the damn thing. Okay? But if they don't do it, you have learned something about what interferes. And that's often very, very helpful. So, you want it collaborative, relevant to their goals, that you want them to understand why. It needs to be feasible. So for someone who's afraid to fly, a good homework assignment is to fly places. Well, not everybody can just fly to, you know, anywhere on a daily basis. So you're going to have to come up with some things that are really feasible to do on a regular basis. You want to ask, okay, ask them to tell you what their assignment was before they leave. Okay, so what's your understanding of what you're going to do to make sure they get it? And then, you know, what do you think? Do you think you can do it? Okay, now, my single favorite question. I'm giving you this for no extra charge. My favorite question to increase compliance before they leave. I try to ask, okay, what's likely to get in the way of you doing this? What's going to stop you? Now, as soon as they look at that, whatever they answer, well, I could get too busy. Okay, let's look at that. How could we schedule it? How could we put it in? You've already killed some of their excuses. They'll come up with new ones, okay? But at least the obvious ones, you've already thought through and problem solved. So it's really good to ask. Don't say, I know you can do it, go you. But also, well, what could get in the way? What could stop you? What's likely to stop you from doing this? And sometimes that really nips it in the bud. Because most people are embarrassed to come in. Well, you know how I said that? Well, I didn't, you know, that's why. And it's like, eh. Now, people get this notion that because this is called cognitive therapy, it's all cognitive and it's all thought sheets. Okay? Wrong. Right. It is true, I gotta tell you, it's true. If you have to have a name for your therapy or you can't sell books. Okay? So Beck started out with cognitive therapy was his term. Actually, Alfred Ellis was a little more progressive. He started with, he kept adding initials to, you know, it was RET, but then he added REBT. So he recognized that he was limiting himself. And so, you know, but, okay, cognitive therapy stuck. And so people get the notion that it's all thought sheets. Homework does not have to include thought sheets. Okay? It's possible, not often, but it's possible to do an entire treatment without thought sheets. We use thought sheets when they are relevant to in meeting the goal. I like looking at thoughts and feelings. It does not, you know, they're all meant, and we get to all the different ways to do that. But it can be reviewing and adding to goals. It can be reading something. It could be exercise. It could be a lot of different things, as long as it's relevant to their goals. There's no one intervention that's universal. So, question, and about getting people so asking the question about what's going to get in the way, and then making it, setting a good assignment, it helps compliance, and then following up on it. Let's just say you were rushed, you had a headache, you didn't have a good idea for home. So let's say you gave a stupid homework assignment that you realized that was pointless. Still ask about it the next time. Put it on the agenda. Ask about it. Because nothing is more likely to kill motivation to follow through if nobody cares. Which, I mean, I really had to work with this one patient who had, she did thought sheets and nobody looked at them, nobody used them, nothing. So she stopped quickly, and when I said, well, how about we look at your thoughts and feelings, she's like, bluey, so I had to make a case. So check on it. If you can, even after you've asked and checked on it, you don't have to be perfect. You can say, you know what, that might not have been the most relevant thing in the world, but we're going to make the next one better. You're allowed to be human. So there are questions about homework in general, even though the compliance part is going to really vary from disorder to disorder, and we're going to talk tons about that. Are there questions about setting or always write it down? That's another thing. How can you ask at the next session if you don't remember? And believe me, I don't want you to remember. Honestly, I would rather people close the folder and move on with their lives. You don't need to memorize. No, just have it there, written, so you know what it was. Nazreen.
So I have two questions. First is homework, does it have? It could be anything, right? Work out every day, or it doesn't have to be paper pencil.
Does not. And cognitive therapy works fine with people who are illiterate. Okay. You can do thought sheets by, on tape recorder or,
what I mean, like homework could be workout.
Oh, yeah.
5 days a week.
Homework could be, now, the thing, it often is helpful to have some way to track it. Okay? So if the homework is to work out,
okay,
3 days a week, 5 days a week,
okay,
it might be helpful for at least they could put a check mark in their appointment book or something, because people will come in and they're like, oh, I don't really remember. So some kind, it doesn't have to be formal. It doesn't have to be one of the beautiful forms that come in in the book. My usual homework assignment is scribbled on a piece of kind of tablet. I'll draw lines if I want them to chart something, But on the other hand, if you're a beautiful form person, go for it. David Burns loves forms. Oh, my God. He has a form for everything. You're trying to not love men who love women who love men who love women. He's got a form for that. He loves it, that's fine. You love it, that's great. But scribbling on a sheet of paper works just as well.
Okay. And this next question, the manual that you, one of the recommended books, Mind Over Mood, you know, how they are like all sorts of homework sheet. Do you guys follow that, or is that?
I do. It can be, you know, I do selected bits if it seems relevant. I don't do much bibliotherapy. I think it's useful for us to read and look at the kinds of options there are, but almost all of my homework is individually designed for the patient. You know, I might use a standard thought record or a standard activity schedule to track, but I'm going to be tracking or targeting something specific. So I don't go through the book, okay, now this week you read chapter one, next week you read chapter two. I do not do that. Again, I figure I know my patient, so I'm going to tell you what you need to know. But if there's some concepts they're having difficulty grasping, or you're giving them an intro, I will definitely use select chapters. But it's a great book. You can totally, if that's your model and you love it, you can do that. They're manualized treatments for every disorder. You know, the important thing, and boy, have I been to tons of meetings about how you use manualized treatments. If you're just following a set manual rote and everybody gets the same thing, you're doing it wrong. It needs, the manuals are a guideline. They're good things to look at and know and cover, but it's got to be geared to the individual. You've got to be taking their goals into account. But bits and pieces, fabulous.
So that same book talks a lot about educating your client about thoughts, moods, the difference between all this. Do you do that standard with all clients, or is that, do you kind of do a little quick kind of check with the client if they understand the difference, and you, if they do, you kind of skip that part?
Well, I don't know if I'd call it skip. I mean, it really depends on what's really the most important towards their goals. The terminology I think it's important, especially for you guys, to know the difference between automatic thoughts and basic core beliefs and assumptions, okay? But whether it's, I don't get into the, whether it's an underlying assumption or some people love the whole name the distortion. Some people love it. I mean, and you're entitled to run with what kind of appeals to you. Personally, I don't need to know why. As far as I'm concerned, I'd rather have the patient looking at their thoughts and saying, okay, this makes no sense for this reason, than putting, you know, is it selective abstraction or mind reading or what, the labels. So I'm not necessarily a label person. So, but I do think if you're going to work with thoughts, you do need to make sure they understand we're talking about the thoughts that just pop into your head uninvited. Those are the automatic thoughts. And that's and we will spend, next session is going to be all about automatic thoughts. And then eventually, as you get further in the treatment, they are going to need to understand when you're working on a deeper level. If you're working with thoughts, which often we are, distinguishing and labeling, you know, and you don't need to spend as much time as Chris does on anything if you don't feel like it's furthering this person's treatment. But what I do find, and I get a lot in the tapes submitted for certification, is people aren't quoting thoughts; they're analyzing, they're talking about. You know, again, I just reviewed a tape, and when I don't use any names, so don't be reluctant to do your tapes, because I won't talk about you specifically, but I might mention some of the things that were not quite right. I just reviewed a tape where the patient gave a beautiful example of, you know, I'm driving to work, and I saw this, and I suddenly got really upset, right? And instead of saying, okay, let's take that moment, now Can you quote for me what was running through your mind? What were your thoughts? Instead, the therapist was like, so what are your thoughts about when you're upset? She just generalized it to meaningless. Or how do you feel when you're vulnerable? That's very different from Tuesday afternoon, and we'll get to all that. But so, yeah, there's nothing magic. I do think I like having those books, especially for you, to give you all kinds of options for homework assignments and things to ways of looking at things, how to present it to clients versus therapists. But, and if you love it and you want to do chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, that'll work too, as long as you're gearing it towards your person. Okay. And the final structural thing is feedback. This is also tough to remember to get in. And, it's the end of the session, you're ready to move on. I get it. But feedback. To be collaborative, you really need to be getting feedback all through the session. It's not just an end of the session thing. You're going to ask, when you're explaining. At some point, you're going to need, if you're going to look at thoughts, people don't know that thoughts affect their feelings. They don't, that's not a given. You're going to need to explain to them how, what you say to yourself can make a huge difference in how you feel and give examples and then you ask, so does that make sense to you? How do you feel about that? Can you give some example? Check in with them. Did you get that? Did it make sense? How do you feel about the homework? You want to get feedback. You want to summarize main points in your session. So far we've talked about the goals for therapy. We got a good start on that. We've touched on this and we've set some homework. Questions, does it make sense to, you want to get that feedback. But you also look at nonverbal feedback. Is the person falling asleep? Are they with you and nodding, or are they are they pulling out their phone and playing games? This is not a good sign. But we always want to, and if at all possible, at the end, towards the end of the session, ask open-ended questions. Collaboration, yes, no. Most patients, unless they're really, mandated to come see you and pissed as hell. Most patients want to be nice. They want you to like them. So if you say, did you think this was a good session? They'll say yes. Or, are you okay with today's session? Yes. That's not going to get you genuine feedback. So I like inviting abuse, not abuse really, but inviting negative. So, I really recommend asking, so how'd you open-ended? How'd you feel about today's session? And then ask, what could have been better? Or what would you have liked to be different? And in the beginning, they're just going to say, oh, no, it was fine, you're wonderful. But if you ask every single session, you know what? Then when they really are upset with you, they know you're going to ask, and they might actually share. And at least you're showing. And then, of course, if they say something negative, you need to, listen to it and not get defensive. Well, what do you mean I wasn't listening to you? Don't do that. I've had patients say, well, I feel like you care more about the homework than you do about me. And I always say, you know what, that's an important thing. Now, what's your, do you have any ideas? And then I'm going to use some guided discovery. Why do you think I care about the homework? Why am I asking about this? Why are we actually doing, and have them... And, I appreciate you sharing that with me. And if it is something that you really, let's just say they say, I don't appreciate that you're always 15 minutes late, which me, and really it doesn't, but, you know, if they did, don't be like, well, what's wrong, you know, I'm good, you know, it's like, you know what, you have a really good point. And that's something I'm working on. I will try to do better. I mean, listen, and don't get defensive. Because if you don't invite the negative, believe me, they're thinking of it at times. And you'd rather hear it than have it fester and have them just not show up. So if, and we tell patients, if you have strong feelings from one of our sessions, feel free to jot down your thoughts and feelings about the therapy. That's legit. You know, I mean, especially if they're very complex or have a personality disorder, be prepared. They're going to have some feelings. And you want to find out about those rather than have them hidden. Now, Beck and Burns both love paper, okay? I mean, I hope that early on they took out some stock in paper companies because they love paper. And so they do have feedback at the end of the session forms, and all the different books have forms. Now, personally, I think patients are only going to do so much writing. So I'm very selective. I want something that's going to really move them towards their goals. So when I worked at Beck, hey, when we were postdocs, we did all the forms he asked us because we were good kids. Okay. And every single patient got the feedback at the end of session form. I don't want to burn my clients out with paper. But you're going to know if you have a patient that you can tell has trust issues, or if you have the feeling that they wouldn't be comfortable telling you, but something, you know, if they're for selective patients, where you're concerned that they're, you know, something's going on and they're not telling you, and if you think, you know, feel free to use a written form. And I'm telling you that people will tell you something in writing that they wouldn't say to your face. So, you know, if you think it would be, and some people do it for every single session, and fine, if that's your agency or if that's what works for you, go for it. I'm less formal. And you'll find Jim and I, even though we're both right, of course, we even do things differently than each other. And you can make this your own. I would ask, certainly in this class when we're doing role plays, I'm going to want you to do it our way. And honestly, I recommend, let's just say some of the things we do are quite different from what you normally do. In here, I'm going to ask you to write down your agenda, take notes on paper. And now, I would recommend that you actually try doing things our way in sessions on your own. I'm not going to be there. I'm not going to yell at you if you don't. But I think it's much harder to tell which pieces work for you and which don't if you haven't tried them. And Well, just let me ask, how many people actually do take written notes during therapy sessions as a routine? Okay, so a little less than half. It's a skill that takes a little while, like maybe two sessions. I mean, really, it seems awkward at first, but I have to tell you, the richness of the material, because if you write it down, you can quote their thoughts. And you can actually track. And the beauty is, unless you have an agency that's really difficult, which you might, but normally you can end the session and you've got your notes already done, and you can put them away and go have fun, have a life. So, but you might not like it. I have to tell you, I get lots of feedback, and my style isn't everybody's style, but. I take notes every session, all through the session. And one thing I do not get comments that I'm cold and impersonal and distant. I do get too perky and too Pollyanna. I mean, I do not get cold and impersonal, even though I'm writing notes every single session. Okay? So, try it. But in here, we are going to expect you to try it. And you'll make it your own. You don't have to use our words, but we want you to try out the model with all the pieces. And it's amazing how it can make, you know, each piece is there for a reason. And, like, the agenda really helps keep you focused, and it seems collaborative to people. You're not just marching in and telling, you know, you're not running it. They have a say. Homework, you know, definitely moves people. Because the changes need to happen out there, not in your office. If they're not doing anything out there, great. They might feel better in your office. So what? And feedback, you know. If people tell you how they feel or what they're getting, you're much more likely to be able to use that feedback and change things. All right, so now what we're going to do is another 6 minutes, maybe 6.5, and then we're going to get together and I'm going to explain the role play. Anybody who leaves suddenly, I'm not going to say a thing, but I'm going to suspect that you're avoiding, and I have to say, trying things out in here is a nice, safe way to get some practice. So sticking it out, and I am joking because I understand people do have lives. I want you to have lives. You're going to do a better job if you have lives. But don't avoid the role plays in general. Just be, everybody's a little uncomfortable with them at first. And by the way, Jim acknowledged to me in a note, he didn't spend as much time on agendas and probably not on as much time on the role plays as he would have liked to. So I don't expect a lot because he didn't spend enough time on it. So I'm not going to judge anybody. All right? We'll be back.